Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience, produced at a different location every week. I'm Eve of Youth Speaks Out in Laytonville, California. Today on Sprouts, we will speak to our math teacher and our principal. We ask them how they develop their educational vocations and their other roles in our small rural community. Hello, welcome to You Speak Out podcast. I'm Eve Crowling, and I'm a sophomore at Laytonville High School. I'm here joined today by our principal, Tim Henry.
Hi, Eve.
Hi. I want to start off by asking, what's the role of a principal? Like, what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
I think that's going to differ depending on what type of high school or how big of a high school. If, you know, the high school where I attended, 2,000 students, you had, you know, a principal and assistant principals, and some were focused on curriculum and some were focused on behavior, and some were focused on staffing, and, you know, there was a lot of division of labor. And in this county and in many of the small schools, the simple answer is everything, all duties as necessary. I don't have an exact breakdown of how my time is spent, but it's split between curriculum and instruction development, working directly with teachers on instruction, working with the community, and that might be, you know, talking to parents in the parking lot, or it might be site council, where we make all sorts of decisions on behalf of the school and the student body. It might be figuring out ways to improve attendance, how to incentivize better performance amongst our students. And of course, as many might expect, a chunk of time is spent on discipline as well.
You mentioned working with teachers, and as I might say, used to be a teacher. And so how do you...
I used to be your teacher.
Used to be my teacher up at
starting
little,
at kindergarten.
Little Spyrock up there. What are some of the contrast of being a teacher compared to being a principal, and how can you learn from what you did as a teacher into you being a principal?
There's quite a few contrasts and obviously quite a few similarities. I think that the similarities include working with students, and that's, I think, what binds us all together. And we often ask the question, especially in our staff meetings and when we're discussing these matters, is, you know, what can we do for our students? How can we better prepare them? And I think that really gets down to the essence and the purpose of high school, is, you know, we can take pride on our students based on how they perform out in the world, whether that's, you know, in their careers or in their, you know, in college, or how they become community contributors. The differences probably have to do with, you know, the administrative duties and looking at things from maybe a legalistic perspective sometimes, getting a little bit more perspective and trying to make decisions that keep, like, the entire student body safe, or that put us on a track towards progress. And so there's a little less direct dealings with students and a little more direct dealing with adults and staffing. And that's, I think that's where the big difference comes. And when you're a teacher, you really are focused on what's happening with the classroom, and your focus is very much on the individual students in your classroom and how you can improve the instruction, you know, what kind of programs you can give to them. And I think as a principal or an administrator, you're taking a wider perspective, and you're looking at the whole picture.
Well, since this is such a small school, do you recognize any, like, advantages / disadvantages of going to a small school compared to a bigger one?
I think there's both. You know, like I said before, coming from a, you know, I think my graduating class was somewhere around 800, and there's, you know, a certain degree of anonymity there. That has its pluses and minuses too. You can always make new friends and reinvent yourself. And in a large high school, there's lots of programs. There's not just a calculus class, but there's going to be advanced placement calculus. There's not just a building trades class, but there's going to be, you know, different kinds of wood shops, and there's metal shop and an auto, you know, so there's a lot more options at a larger school, just in terms of every student is going to be able to find something that is going to be appealing to them. On the other side of it, it's very easy in a large school like that to slip through the cracks. And one of the things that our staff prides themselves in here at Laytonville High School is that even if students want to fall through the cracks, we don't let them. we definitely keep close tabs on where students are academically and emotionally and otherwise. And if we see something happening, we definitely step in and, you know, share time in our staff meetings every week to share any student concerns and have a formal process to step in and find a way to help students.
Wow, I think that's good. Do you think graduating from a small town has any, like a small town high school, has any effect on a student getting into college?
No.
No?
No.
Not at all?
I really think that if students, and I've seen this, you know, in my time living in Laytonville, is that if a student takes advantage of everything this high school has to offer and everything that this community and the community of Laytonville has to offer, they can go anywhere and do anything. That's not going to be what holds a student back. I also think that colleges have admission processes in place that takes into account, you know, whether they've come from a large school and what they have, what they're able to take advantage of, or versus students who come from a small school and they've done everything that they can in their school and they've taken every academic class possible. So, you know, we've had students go to Berkeley and all kinds of state colleges. When it's all said and done, I think that our students can still be very competitive. And now I think what's changed, especially in the last, say, 5, if not 10 years, is that more and more students are taking community college classes while they're in high school. So you not only have all the classes that are available at the high school, but we also take an active role in providing books and support in enrolling in community college classes. In our case, it's specific with Mendocino College because we have, you know, we have certain partnerships with them. So that whatever they're offering, our students can take, as long as there's no prerequisite that they are supposed to have beforehand. And we do support them in that through providing books for them through the college, and you know, it's virtually free for them.
Yeah, as a student, I think that's very useful because it was my scheduling. I had to get foreign language credits in there, and I'm taking it at the college currently, and those books are expensive. Mine was like $140. So,
yeah, our superintendent is, you know, very forward thinking in that manner, and she made sure that in our plan and our budget that was set.
Mm-hmm. Why did you become like interested in being in the educational career? Did you set it off to be that in college, or did you decide later on?
For me, it's a vocation. I've always been working with children. You know, my mom had a daycare in her home growing up, and so I had a lot of responsibilities helping her with the daycare and then working at camps and after-school programs. It always appealed to me, and I wanted to do something in my life that made a difference. And so it's important to take care of our world, our planet, our communities. And so I think for that reason, working directly with the youth is probably the most important thing that we can do, because it's our future. You know, we eventually die, and the next generation is what carries on. And so I have a lot of interest in life and a lot of directions that I, you know, have dreamed about going, you know, from politics to law to being an apple farmer. But ultimately, I know I can still dabble in those things, and ultimately I can still work with the youth and have involvement in that way. So it was a vocational choice. It was something that I was drawn to and always have been. And it's very fulfilling.
That's great. And since we're talking about like job preparation in high school, I know that we do have like a program where if students have a job, they can take periods out of their day. Am I getting this right?
So yeah, so there's two realms. And one is called work experience and one is called community classroom. And the work experience is for students who choose to have a job that, you know, pertains to their area of studies, and they work in that and then do write-ups and turn that in. And then there's community classroom, where students who have an interest in a particular field actually have sort of like a mentor situation, and they work with those, you know, in a maybe a business or with a, you know, an organization, and do some write-ups and, you know, share out their experiences and get credits in return for that. So, you know, currently we have students working for, you know, the automotive sector, the health field at the Long Valley Health Clinic. Students have historically worked, you know, maybe in food preparation or perhaps bank, or, you know, you could all those different realms. And so, you know, that is something that one of our teachers, Sue Carberry, has, you know, helped to nurture over the years. And other people are finding ways to plug in and help that program get stronger and grow.
I think a lot of people value hands-on, like, experience learning, which is what a lot of schools are moving forward to now. It's less like book and like read this and then answer the questions. And I feel
right. So the Common Core curriculum, which has, you know, pretty much washed over the whole United States, has, you know, some things about it that are really amazing. And one of which is the whole idea that experiential learning and, you know, discussion, students working together, you know, in an exploratory way, is in problem solving, is really like kind of the ideology behind it. And you know, working out of a book and doing question and answer, and you know, that's kind of, you know, a little more simple in terms of like obtaining information, you know, as I think.
But a lot of students don't obtain, at least in my experience, a lot of people don't obtain the information from that type of learning. So
yeah, and you know, given the problems that we face as a society, as a planet, I think that we're really going to have to think outside of the box. And so the whole concept of project-based learning and critical thinking is going to be vital to the future existence of the human race and many of the other species that we share this planet on and depend on. You know, just look at agriculture and the, you know, the problems that we're going to have to overcome, and just in order to feed people, whether it's like seed stock or soil health, or you know the managing changing climate. I mean, those are all things that we're going to have to come up with solutions for. And I think, was it Einstein who said that, like, you know, it's like you can't really solve problems by the same thinking that created them. So this new movement within education, and, you know, some people, you know, have some criticisms of the Common Core curriculum, but if you boil it down to the essence of, we need to prepare our students to adapt to the, you know, to our changing world, and to be critical thinkers and to be problem solvers, I think that we can all agree that that's going to, in theory, be a really good thing for the future of humanity.
Well, I'm Eve Kreiling. I'm a sophomore at Laneville High School, and I've been talking with Mr. Tim Henry, our principal.
Thank you, Eve. Great job.
You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. I'm Tim from Youth Speaks Out in Mendocino County, California, and we are talking with our teachers about their vocations and their avocations. Hi, my name is Tim Skaggs, and right now I'm a musician, and right now I'm interviewing my music teacher, Dennis Hogan. Also, some of my latest electronic music was inspired by his band, the Tasmanian Devils. By the way, the song Showdown, I think it's a great song, and played a huge role in that one song I made called Rock Band. So, Mr. Hogan, what exactly drew you into music?
I was always interested in song, as early as I can remember. I guess my mom sang to me, my older sister sang to me or something, but I just started singing.
Same.
And never stopped.
So, describe your musical career.
The first time I got on stage, I was 3 years old, and I sang a little song. There was a little neighborhood production, and I guess I was singing to my little friends or whatnot, and the older kids heard me and said, well, Dennis, you're going to get up on stage, and, you know, a little neighborhood thing. And I remember I got up and sang my little song, and when I got off that stage and the other little kids got up and did what they were doing, I wanted back on that stage. And I guess I was hooked from then on. Had little groups when I was a kid, little folk groups. Started playing guitar at age 9. We all listened to a group called the Kingston Trio, and then we had a group called the Princeton Trio. Did kind of calypso and stuff like that. I guess I started listening to rock and roll at about age 10 or 11 or something. And I think when the Beatles, I started listening to the Beatles, and I decided I wanted to be a rock and roll musician. So I got some of my friends together and taught a couple of them how to play. And we got a band together and started playing around. And by the time we were seniors, we won the KFRC Battle of the Bands for North Bay, Marin and Sonoma counties. That was pretty good, I guess, you know. Went to college, used San Diego, started a band down there. And then decided to leave school and went to Europe, played music, played on the streets of, I lived in Norway, and but I'd go to Copenhagen and Amsterdam, and Oslo, London, play, you know, just busking, you know, they call it over there. Mm-hmm. And I tried to get a record deal there in England. And didn't get anything. Came back here, finished college, and when I finished college, I got together with some of my high school friends, and we started the Tasmanians, and played around the Bay Area for a few years, got signed with Warner Brothers, and did those couple of albums with them, had a hit in England, funny, and... Then, you know, I think the music business was not for me. I had a daughter at that time, and I wanted to be with her rather than touring. You know, I found that it was just not what I really wanted to do. It was a pretty stressful business, really. So went back to school, became a teacher, and here I am.
Yep, here you are. And if I'm not mistaken, you're actually back with the Tasmanian Devils now, and you guys still play sometimes.
Well, yeah, we've never stopped being friends.
Oh, yeah.
You know, of the five original members, four of us still play together. One guy lives up in Idaho, but the four of us who are still playing were all friends in high school. Not necessarily in the same band, but the lead guitar player and I met when we were in high school and started playing together. And we've written quite a few of the songs. That one you mentioned, Showdown, Dave writes music, and then I come up with words and vocals. My first year at the high school, there was a little group that used to practice at lunch. They'd play and whatnot, and they were pretty good. And one day they were playing a Hendrix song. They were playing Hey Joe. And I was listening. I was talking to the principal and listening out in the hall, and suddenly I heard a wrong note. And I thought, oh, my, wow, that's weird. So I went in and said, hey, that one part is not right. Showed them how to play it. And then they wanted me to sing with them or something, and that was the first year I was at the high school, and we did a couple of little things, you know. And after that, my friend Paula at the time, Paula Mulligan, was the English teacher. She's my friend and neighbor. And then we taught a couple of classes together that was more rock oriented. I guess I think I taught a middle school class, maybe middle school music class, and, you know, it was more rock oriented. And then over the years, you know, the kids who wanted to play music would just say, hey, you know, we really want to play. I mean, sometimes we'd have to, there wouldn't be necessarily a rock band class. We'd meet at lunch or after school or something. And then finally, when Mrs. Potter became the principal, I think she actually formalized the rock band class. And that would have been, gosh, almost 20 years ago now, actually. Yeah. So, and after that, there's been a rock band class every year, and now two rock band classes and a middle school class.
So your high school offered a music program?
Yeah, I went to a large high school in Marin County. But the music class, music classes, really, they had a vocal, they had a marching band, they had a jazz band, and they had a chorus, they called. But I was a singer, guitar player, you know. And there wasn't, you know, even in the jazz class, I don't even think there was a guitar. They didn't have a guitarist in the jazz class. Yeah, they have saxes. It was saxophone. It was a big band, what you call big band music. I guess I have sung in choirs or choruses and things, but I was kind of to be honest with you, I was kind of a math science student when I was in high school, and I played music for myself every day, but it wasn't the music that was offered at the high school wasn't the music that I was listening to.
Okay, that would make sense then. Usually you're good at something if you really like it. So the music program you have here, this is a daily class?
I work 2 days a week. I do my math classes in block periods, but we meet as a rock band 2 days a week. And I found that we can get everything done that we need to get done in two rehearsals a week. It requires focus, and it requires you guys to go home and practice. So it meets 2 days a week, basically, and, you know, we get ready, do various shows. We do, first show is Homecoming, which is usually in October, and then we do a winter concert, and then we do a variety of concerts in the spring. Go to Mendocino High School, play at the elementary school, probably play up at Benbow Arts Festival, play at graduation.
Oh, yeah, that's right. What would you say is your method for teaching?
For beginning students, I would say I had a sort of a repertoire of easy guitar rock type songs, surf music, songs that are easy to play. The thing about rock and roll is I think of it as a kind of a folk music. And I think folk music, if you define it as a music that is played by maybe untrained people. In other words, I don't think rock musicians have necessarily gone to Berklee School of Music or something like that. And a lot of it's learned by ear, or you watch somebody play. That's how I learned. I'd go to shows, I'd sit in the front row, and I'd watch the guitar player. So I think of it as folk music. And so folk music is actually doable. You don't have to be a great musician, hugely skilled, to be able to sound pretty good. So I start out with that in mind, showing easy, simple songs. How do you play a blues pattern? You know, how do you put your fingers? How do you play this chord? How do you play that chord? I work with the drummers quite a bit. I'm not a drummer myself, but I've played with great drummers, and I know what they do. And after that, what I try to do is to get you guys, the kids, to bring in songs that they like or you like. Because because it's your music that you're playing now, you know. And I've actually learned a lot about rock and modern rock and even old rock that I didn't think I was necessarily that interested in by you guys bringing songs in. So what we do is we pick a day and everybody brings in something on their phone or their computer, and we play it through the big system, and then we have a process of deciding which couple of songs we're going to focus on. And then I usually try to write charts, which is like sort of like written music, but it's basically what are the chords, you know, what are the changes, you know, what's a basic riff, you know, what is the guitar player basically doing that's you hear a riff is like, you know, the signature line in the melody or the opening of satisfaction. You'd call that a riff. And then, you know, have you guys listen? Have you guys practice? Have this? You have to make sure that the singers can sing the song. If the singers can't sing the song, you can't do it because, you know, a song is about singers and the band backs the singers up. And so, you know, I like it because by the time you guys get good, it's kid generated material. I don't generate the material unless nobody can come up with any ideas.
Right, like the song "Paint It Black." That was your decision, and
right, that'd be like an easy song that's people who don't know how to play. For example, you were in a class with a couple of beginners, right? You already knew how to play. So I had you play the keyboard part. Right. So that was new for you.
It was.
And, you know, the other kids could play. And it sounds pretty much like, you know, Paint It Black, you know.
That's my favorite one that we're doing right now.
My name is Tim Skaggs. I'm a senior at Laytonville High School. And I've been talking to my band teacher, Mr. Dennis Hogan. Rock on. That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to Youth Speaks Out on Vocations and Avocations. Our contributors this week included Tim Skaggs talking with Dennis Hogan and Eve Kreiling talking with Tim Henry at Laytonville High School in Northern California. Production assistance came from Dan Roberts, the producer of Youth Speaks Out in Mendocino County. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. This program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producers were Dan, Tim, and Eve at youthspeaksout.net. Please subscribe to our podcast. I'm Tim in Laytonville, California. Thank you for listening. And see you next week on Sprouts.